This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And welcome back to another Saturday morning at 8:30. It's The Gardening Show. I'm Igor, and with me always is Master Gardener Bob Harris. Good morning.
Good morning, Igor.
Oh, my. It's been a wet, wild week, and it's not going to stop anytime soon, is it?
No, it's not.
Okay. Well, at least we don't have to water the garden, right?
That's what I wanted to talk about. Yes.
Thanks, nature.
Yeah. So I know that most people injure or kill a plant by overwatering. That is the number one cause of harming a plant. So I want to talk about, you know, all the rain we've had. And I know some people care for their plants a lot because they have that investment, whether it be financial or just like to grow plants or just want to see them survive so much that they kind sometimes overcare for them. A plant really needs to dry out between waterings. Now, when Mother Nature just rains, there's nothing you can do about it. But believe me, the plants have adapted to that. But what they haven't adapted to is when you step in after a rain or between rains and then water when it's already wet. That can cause a lot of damage. I hate to keep going on and on about this, but it is so important, especially for beginning gardeners and even older gardeners. You know, we all tend to look at a plant and say, geez, I didn't water yesterday or the day before. I must need water by now. I'm just going to water it. You know, it's a real good idea to really test that soil. Take that extra minute and not just look at the soil surface, because that can be dry and it can be wet underneath. A lot of plants have very deep, deep roots so that they can find moisture even deeper. So sometimes it's a good idea. Take your finger or trowel or stick, anything, and try to do a little hole and look at the soil and feel the soil. If it is real dark and looks damp, then it probably is, and leave the plant alone. At the same token, you know, we can have a nice rainy day, and then the next day it can get really hot, 80 degrees or above, and a plant can be wilting. So you see it wilting and you think, well, it must need water. A plant can wilt even when it's wet. What happens is there I'm looking at your facial expressions here.
I'm trying to get us on Facebook Live, and it's just like it's different every week. Oh, okay. So I don't know.
Okay.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Yeah. Go ahead.
So a plant can wilt even when it's wet during a really windy day or a real hot day. It can't transport the moisture up faster than it's being evaporated. So have that in mind when you're looking at your plants. Even if it's wilty looking, it may not need watered. And by watering it, you can do some damage. I go through this all the time. And my wife will even point out, say, geez, that tomato plant looks like it's wilting, you know. Mm. And I have a tendency to run out there and water it. But we have had a lot of rain lately. And most of the time, we really don't need to water. Again, I got to stress that it's a good idea to once in a while let your plants dry out, even to the point to where they wilt. That can aerate the soil. We see golf courses and so on always poking them little holes in the ground. What they're doing is aerating the soil. It's very important that air gets down in the soil and lets the gases out lets a lot of that moisture evaporate so it doesn't sit there and become rancid or old where it'll harm the plant again. And boy, I'm going on and on about this, but this is...
No, that's why the show is here. Yeah. We need to hear this because it's fascinating. I didn't know that you had to aerate the soil and all that stuff. I just figured dirt's dirt. Stuff grows in it. I don't know.
Yeah. But again, I don't want to make gardening complicated either, because it doesn't have to be complicated. It can be simple. All that needs to evaporate there so we can get fresh air, fresh water down into the ground, or even in pots too. So once in a while, even after a lot of rains, what I'll tend to do, because the rains can, that raindrop hits the soil and it splashes up. And of course, the big particles will fall back to the ground first, and the very small particles last. And it can start to form a crust on top of the soil, so that we do have a poor exchange of gases out of the soil, air into the soil, and even sometimes water, because of that crust, can have a rough time getting down in the soil, can just hit the soil and run off. So once in a while, after a few rains, I'll go out there with my garden claw or one of those things to scratch the surface of the soil to break that barrier. They have a scientific name for that barrier, and I forget, you know, because not only is it the small particles of soil, mold and mildew and fungus start to grow across it, we really don't see, and that can start to form that crust layer. So once in a while, it is a good idea to scratch the surface, not deeply, just the surface, and we'll help that process of oxygen getting down there, the old water evaporating out. We'll even help fertilizers getting down deep into the root system where they're most needed. So I've gone on and on about this, I guess, long enough. So just be careful about your watering.
You said it time and time again. That's the number one problem that people do to harm their plants is over water.
That's true. So it's so easy to do.
Now we are on Facebook Live. Just wanted to mention we have, five viewers already. We've been up for about a half minute there. So you can comment in the comments there your questions for Bob. And our email is also open, garden@wesb.com. And, of course, our phone lines are open for you at 814-368-WESB. That's 814-368-9372.
Okay, another thing, you know, that's probably on the top of a lot of us that have yards mind is the gypsy moth. Of course, you've probably seen some of the articles or read them on Facebook and so on. They're just about done for the season of chewing leaves. So now they've changed over to moths, and you may see a lot of those little light tan-colored moths flying around. So with that, be aware that they'll start laying their eggs in massive egg casings or sacks, whatever you want to call them, on the trunks of trees and even buildings. So in a week or two, it's a good idea to go around the yard. If you see any of these, scrape them off into a container and drown them or get rid of them. Don't just scrape them off and leave them lay on the ground. Most of the time, they will die off when they hit the ground, but there are some that won't. So be aware that that's going to help lessen the population next year by a great deal. You know, there may be hundreds of eggs in that one egg mass, so every one you scrape off, you've just saved yourself a lot of damage next year. But you probably have noticed, too, that a lot of the trees are starting to re-leaf, and that's common. They've dealt with predators like the gypsy moth and herbivores that have and other caterpillars that have eaten leaves off before, so that they are capable. They just put out one set of leaves to begin with, and if all those leaves are eaten off, they are capable of re-leafing. Some trees up to three times they can re-leaf. So don't be concerned. A lot of our trees are not going to die just because there's no leaves left on it right now, especially if we start to see new growth appearing. Some trees that get attacked year after year, that may weaken them to the point where they will die. But most of them are going to survive this and re-leaf and be fine. It weakens them a little bit that first year, to where they may not put on the growth that they normally put on. But then the next year, because of, and this is just my information. This isn't scientific proof or anything. But
this is the observations of
observation.
You're 5 years in the business. Go ahead.
30 minutes in the business. What I have noticed, though, you know, as those caterpillars are chewing all those leaves, I'll say on an oak tree, of course, they're releasing a lot of their waste material right straight down. Now, that becomes fertilizer for the tree. So the next year, all that fertilizer is going to benefit the tree so that this year it doesn't put on much of a growth spurt. But the next year after, with all that extra fertilizer, it usually puts on a bigger growth spurt. One of my hobbies is studying tree rings. I like to collect, they call it cookies or slices from a tree, and look at the rings. And we can see a lot of what has happened in the past and what may happen even into the future with looking at the tree rings. Not just weather conditions. A lot of people think, well, when you look at tree rings, and this is getting off the subject a little bit, but I like to talk about this, and it could be important. It doesn't even have to be the whole trunk. You can even look at a branch. We can learn a lot from those tree rings. Sometimes they're wide, sometimes they're narrow, they may even cross. But what was I going to get at here?
You were talking about bug or the leaves regenerating. I don't know.
So looking at those tree rings over the years, I've seen that there is that wider one. It doesn't always have to be with, especially in our area. You know, we've always learned that if it's a wet year, you have a wide ring. If it's a dry year, you have a narrow ring. Well, that doesn't really happen so much in our area because we always have a wet year. I can't recall any dry years in this area. So we mostly go by just the condition of the year, how long the year was from last frost to first frost, or how hard the winter was. That's how we judge our ring width. Knowing that, I've been able to decipher some of the growth of the trees. And I noticed that the gypsy moths occur in this area about every 10, 11, 12 years.
Okay.
And we will see that narrow ring. But then after that, we'll see a wider ring. Of course, there can be other things involved, too, depending on the site where the tree is. If it's in a deep valley where maybe the year is a little bit shorter, where we have a late frost and then an early frost, that tree could have narrow rings.
Okay. And then just to get back to you were saying about the bugs or the moths destroying the trees and the leaves can regenerate up to a certain point.
Yeah.
Well, how much of the tree do they actually have to damage for it to be a serious thing? I mean, a couple of leaves, you know, not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
But when you say it actually weakens a tree, about how much of the tree has to be affected by that?
Oh, over 50% of the tree has to be affected. Yeah. It can even be to the point where there's not a single leaf left on a tree and that tree can still survive. Because I say they've had millions and millions of years to adapt to this kind of thing. Not just a gypsy moth. You know, you can go back to the time when there was mammoths and giant sloths and so on here that could strip all the leaves off a plant, but it could still... Of course, then the mammoth is going to travel on to the next.
Right.
That gives a message to that plant. Now it's time to re-leaf and I'll be fine.
Hey, we have a phone call.
Okay. Let's take that phone call.
All right. 368-WESB, 814-368-9372. And good morning. You're on the gardening show.
Oh, good morning. On the subject of those gypsy moths, where they have laid their eggs on the tree and have those big masses... Is there something we can do when they're out of reach? We can't scrape beyond a certain height.
Yeah. Okay. Right? Can you take a long stick or something like that and do it?
Well, no. The tree is many, many feet high.
Yeah. They don't normally lay their egg masses up high in a tree. It's usually down low, right within reach. Those ones that are way up high, there's nothing you can do about it. I don't recommend any sprays or anything because they're really protected underneath that casing. So it's almost a waste of time. What you can hope for is the birds or the chipmunks or somebody's going to get up there and eat those off for you. So don't really worry about those ones that are out of reach.
But try to scrape off all the ones we can reach.
Yes, yes.
Okay. That was my subject today, and you were right on it.
Oh, all right. Good. Yeah, because it is a big concern around here, and it will be for a lot of years because of their cycle of growth and relaxation, whatever you want to call it. They have scientific term for it, but every so many years there'll be a massive population of gypsy moss that will do a lot of damage. But believe me, most of the trees and plants have adapted to that and can survive it with no trouble at all. But it does help also, since we're on that subject, if we can, there is a product called BT I talked about last week that we can apply. It's not an insecticide. It's a living organism that will attack the gypsy moth, and that can lessen the population. You're not going to get rid of them totally, but it can lessen the population. It's not going to harm anything else.
No, it's called BT. Is it labeled as such in the store? Or what?
Yeah, yeah.
Does it have a brand name or a different alias or anything? Or?
Yeah, Bacillus thuringiensis.
Okay.
But because of that term, most of the time you'll just see it as BT.
Well, there you go. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah. Oh, is this BT a spray, a powder, or what is it?
It's a spray, yeah. And like I say, it's a safe one that you can spray. Comes in a lot of different mixtures that you can just hook onto your hose or put in your sprayer and spray around, and it'll just sit there and wait for the gypsy moth to get close, and it'll attack it. And a good sign that it has attacked is if you see those dead gypsy moths, caterpillars on the trunk of a tree in an L-shape. That means they've been attacked probably by that BT, and it's killed them off.
But it's too late to do that this year.
Oh, no. No, it's never too late.
Oh.
Yeah, you can still do that because once you spray it, it's going to be there in the environment for a long, long time, many years. And hopefully it'll even multiply.
Okay, very good.
All right, thanks for the call. You have a great weekend.
Bye.
Bye. All right. 368-WESB. That's 814-368-9372. We have a Facebook message from Joe Crowley. He says, hello, Bob. We have an apple tree and two pear trees and a partridge in a... No, just kidding. But the trees are about 3 years old now. The bugs or something is eating the apple tree leaves. Something you recommend to help stop that?
Yeah, Joe. Geez, that partridge, you don't want to harm that. So there are a lot of fruit tree sprays out there that are specific for fruit trees that you can use. Go by the label. It can be a complicated process because the label is going to tell you to spray at bud break and leaf when it first comes out, and then at another time and in a certain schedule of every 14 days or something. Or you can just accept that the tree is being attacked this year and there will be some damage, but my tree is still fine and living. It helps to keep a tree pruned out a little bit, especially fruit trees, so that you can see through the tree. You don't want so many leaves that you can't see through, because that can create an environment that is better for bugs to keep living there. A nice open canopy, we call it, makes it hard for the bugs to survive, because there's a lot of other predators out there that are getting to the bugs. But when a tree gets to the point where it has so many leaves, it makes a good hiding spot for all those bugs. So those are a couple things I would suggest. Trimming your tree to open up the canopy, let more sunlight in there so it can dry out, make it easier for predators to pick off those bugs. Another thing is I lost track. I thought about it when I first started talking to you, Joe. But try to do that. And, of course, be patient. Every once in a while, you're going to have a bug attack. Doesn't mean it's going to happen every year. The bugs usually have that where they'll attack. They have masses once a year, and then for a few years they kind of relax. There's a lot of natural predators. They do the same thing, which I go back to that gypsy moth, you know, that BT. It may be part of why we only get the gypsy moth attack every 10, 11, 12 years is because that BT starts to work on them for a while. And then, of course, the gypsy moth has developed a system that we won't overpopulate an area for a certain length of time. And that means that BT population will go down so that when we do come back, we won't be attacked so hard. So it's a cycle of life that all in nature gets into. And boy, am I rambling?
No, I'm just thinking it's nature's whack-a-mole.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good way of describing it. Yeah.
They come out every now and then, and then they know to go back for a while.
Yeah, the term is that nature's cycle of abundance. Everything has a peak and then a low.
Wow. That's incredible. Hey, we have to take a commercial break because, you know, we got to keep the lights on.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll be back. And hey, 30 seconds. That's easy, right? We'll be back. More gardening show. Master Gardener Bob Harris. B107.5.
If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford, like railroad ties for your lawn and garden projects, lawnmower blades and repair kits, and gas-powered string trimmers. Worth Smith also carries a full line of durable Kevlar belts up to 120 inches in length. You'll find plenty of concrete mix in stock. And for your grilling or camper, don't forget to take your propane tanks to Worth Smith for a summertime fill-up. It's really true. If you need it, you'll always find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
See, just like that. Welcome back to The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris on B107.5. We were just talking about Joe Crowley. He messaged us, facebook.com/WESB107.5, talking about his fruit trees, and he was having some bugs. And he said he just he bought some 7 spray for the trees yesterday to try. Do you recommend that?
Yeah, I recommend that. It's one of the real safe insecticides. Just be careful. Don't do it on a windy day. Try to find a day where it's not going to rain the next day. So, that one's a good one.
Okay. And we had a call coming through, but they had second thoughts, but that's okay.
Okay.
If we're talking about any other subject, feel free to give us a call with yours anyway, because we like to switch it up too. So if you have any questions, you can give us a call now at 814-368-9372. And you did want to hit on some bugs and things?
Yeah, but first I want to go back to Joe Crowley here.
Okay.
Joe.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people will say, well, geez, those bugs are damaging a lot of leaves. First thing I'll do is water and fertilize that tree or shrub. That can be a big mistake. Most of those bugs are looking for the new growth of a tree or a shrub, that new growth, because that's the easiest part of the plant to attack and get the juices and the nutrients they need. So by fertilizing, we can encourage a lot of new growth, which will encourage a lot of new bugs. So just try to relax, let the plant do its thing, because it has its own defense system, which it can take care of that bug attack. But by you fertilizing, you've thrown off that defense system and made it so you sometimes encourage more bugs to attack that tree. So don't be quick to fertilize that tree that's being attacked, because you may just make the attack worse.
We have a phone call coming
in.
Okay. 368-9372 to get a hold of us here at The Gardening Show, and you are on the air next. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question.
Go ahead and turn down your radio.
Yeah, I have a question about my tall fly caterpillars, I think they are, that destroyed my rose bush.
Okay.
They're little black fuzzy things, and they've eaten all the leaves.
Yeah. 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 You think you have sawflies, huh?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. They're real easy to get rid of. You can mix up some soapy water and spray in a sprayer and spray that on, or you can use one of the safer insecticides like 7, and that will come in a liquid you can spray on, or even a powder where you can dust it on, and that will help you out with that sawfly attack.
And will the roses regrow leaves and buds?
Oh yeah, they will. They will, without a doubt.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, and you have a fantastic weekend. Now, 368-WESB, if you'd like to get a hold of us, that's 814-368-9372. And so you're not in an echo chamber. We recommend you turn down your radio a little bit. And go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, so getting a lot of questions about bugs and attack of our plants. One thing I do want to mention, you know, with gardeners, some people can get discouraged by that. They look out and say, geez, my rose bush or my tree, maple tree, you know, is getting harmed, and this gardening thing isn't cut up, you know, made for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just going to happen in nature, and we just have to be patient. Some years we're going to have some bad luck. We all do, you know, even some of us gardeners that have been doing it for a long time. We just got to accept that. It's not our fault most of the time. So just be patient. Next year may be better, or even next week may be better. So try to relax. Take care of the big problems. Let the little ones, you know, you've heard all that stuff before. Let the little ones just go. But take care of the big problems the best you can. And let nature most of the time take its course, because it is going to fix itself.
Japanese beetles.
That's
my problem.
Okay.
They ate up all of our strawberries.
My favorite one, and there's no good quick fix. There are chemicals out there that we can put down that will kill off the Japanese beetle, but it doesn't kill off their ability to repopulate the next year. One product does.
Milky Spore.
Yeah, Milky Spore.
I looked into that. You know how expensive that stuff is?
It's a little expensive, but you're only going to apply it once in your lifetime.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So that makes it cheap.
Okay.
Instead of buying that other stuff every single year.
It's an investment.
Yeah, it's an investment.
Right.
And it can be even not only for you, you know, it can be for your neighbor too.
Yeah.
So a Milky Spore, and again, that's not a chemical pesticide. That's a natural occurring thing.
It's like a bacteria or something.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That it's a powder that you spread around your yard in well-drained areas that will attack the Japanese beetle in its grub stage, where it's underneath your ground feeding on your grass roots or tree or shrub roots. It'll attack them. And that will lower that population. And it has a way of knowing. If there's a big Japanese beetle population, it will multiply quickly to help with that population. When that population is real low, it stops multiplying and just sits there and waits, and it can wait for a decades until that population comes back, and then, of course, then it'll increase. But it's not a quick-acting product. You're not going to see the effect, you know, overnight or even in the first year. It's going to take a year or two, but it's well worth the wait because, again, I say it's expensive to buy the first time, but it's a one-time deal that you're not going to have to treat them and worry about them year after year after year.
Do you put it in a spreader or something, or do you just kind of sprinkle it by?
Yeah, just kind of sprinkle it
by hand.
They usually in the container will have a little spoon, a little plastic spoon that you take that little spoonful as you're walking through the yard and just cast out some here and there. There probably are ones I haven't kept up to date on it that you can put in a spreader and cover your whole lawn. But you know, it's a waste to put it in an area that's wet. So anybody that has those rain gardens, don't apply it right there because it won't survive the wet areas. It's got to be well-drained areas.
Okay. Anything else on that list you wanted to get to that you could cover in about 45 seconds?
Yes, slugs. Slugs, that's another big one. Because we've had so much rain, and there are a lot of slugs out there. Some of the things to look for, slugs like to hide out during the daytime. So they like to hide out underneath landscape fabric, underneath stone pathways.
Anything that's touching, if I have like, you know, plastic totes or something, they get under there.
Yeah.
Anything, yeah.
Anything laying on the ground, they're going to hide under mm-hmm. during the day and then come out at night. So there are slug baits out there that will affect them quite a bit. Or you can just start removing all those things that lay on the ground and give them a nice home for the daytime and a place to multiply. So
give them less hiding places and then you'll have less slugs.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. All right. Very good. What's usually in slug bait? Is that anything that we can create at home?
Not to my knowledge. Yeah. And I really cringe at a lot of those home-based products because, you know, they may work for Joe, but they don't work for Mary.
Gotcha.
and a lot of times there are consequences that come from a lot of those home remedies.
Mm.
Unintended consequences.
Okay. Yeah, you'll get rid of the slugs, but you're going to kill your grass too. Like that. Okay.
Yeah.
And like you've said before, time and time again, it's you go out at the evening, early evening, and with your salt shaker, and you take care of the slugs the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, and that little bit of salt is not going to affect anything. I know that's a home remedy, but do I have 1 minute?
Well, no.
No, okay. No problem. I'll talk about
that next week. That's called a teaser for next week.
Yeah.
You see, join us next week for Bob's thought on slugs right here on The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. We'll see you then on B107.5 and on demand at WESB.com.